sail the deep and tranquil sea. But he washed me ashore, and he took my
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Jennifer Norris, who's a former U.S. Air Force tech sergeant who was forced into early retirement because of post-traumatic distress disorder from military sexual trauma. She currently volunteers at the Military Rape Crisis Center, helping both active duty and veteran victims of sexual violence. Welcome to Background Briefing, Jennifer Norris.
Thank you very much.
And President Obama said today that military personnel who engage in sexual assault are betraying the uniform they are wearing, that such behavior is not only unacceptable, but illegal and unpatriotic. Do you think the Commander-in-Chief's words are going to resonate with the rank and file, and particularly the officers?
Well, I think that President Obama's timing is impeccable as far as to us as advocates, it's reached to the point that it's at a crisis level, as evidenced by the increases in numbers. So the fact that he came out and publicly endorsed the fact that this is wrong, this isn't just an issue, it is a crime, it clearly does go against everything that the military stands for.
And of course, the question was in response to the Pentagon report that was released today that estimates that 26,000 people in the military were sexually assaulted in 2012. That's up from 19,000 for the same period the year before. That's a rise of 6%. And of course, those figures themselves may be low, right?
Definitely, we've felt all along that numbers are being unreported or underreported because of the fact that people are too fearful to report due to the retaliation. And that's evidenced also in the report because it shows that in 2011, only 3,192 reported. In 2012, only 3,347 reported. So that clearly goes back to the DOD's implementation plan, which was to improve or increase the reporting, which clearly didn't work.
So how did they come up with 26,000 if the reporting figure was only 3,000 plus?
Well, what they do is they do what's called like a health assessment or a culture survey. And they do it like every 3 years or, you know, it just depends on what that particular survey is that they used at the time. And it's mandatory for personnel to sit down and take these surveys. They're supposed to be anonymous. A lot of us used to feel like they weren't necessarily anonymous. So if people are telling them, you know, 26,000 people are saying this is what's happening, we know that it's higher based on the fact that when we were in the military, we were too scared to say on those surveys whether or not, you know, we had been assaulted because we didn't know if it was confidential. So that says a lot.
So then this is obviously extremely inexact, but the point that you're saying is that even when you offered a chance to speak up, a lot of people are still afraid. So what will it take to give people that comfort factor? Because the irony is that the one thing that's supposedly been done here is that the military have set up these sexual assault prevention and response programs within the services. And ironically, Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Kaczynski, who is the head of the Air Force's branch of the Sexual Assault Prevention and Response Program, he himself was just arrested yesterday for sexual assault. So tell me about this program so far, which doesn't look like it's working, this SAPRP program.
To put it politely. It's window dressing. It looks good on paper, just like their policies do, but when it comes to implementation, it's not happening, which is why the need for an organization like Military Rape Crisis Center. They can't turn to someone that's impartial to help them because all the folks in the military are connected in one way or another. So they call an outside organization like MRCC to help them actually get things done because it can't be done within the military. Many reasons for that. One, they don't trust the SAPROs. They know it's just a joke and that anything that comes out of the SAPRO office is like a half measure, if that. So folks know this on the ground that, you know, even though the Department of Defense is saying, oh, yeah, we have this, we have this, we have this, active duty military know better. And they know that it's still not a safe place to go because there's no guarantees for confidentiality. And just like, you know, basically what we want is so when if something happens to someone that they don't have to report it to their boss. That would never happen in the civilian community. There's no reason why it should happen in the military. So we want all the violent crimes taken out of the jurisdiction of the commander or the chain of command so that they will feel safe to go to an impartial, you know, investigative body that will take them seriously, make sure that they're safe, make sure that they're transferred to a new location if they're trying to get away from the geographic location of their attacker. And then if they need to get out because it's healthier for them to get out, then we help them get out with benefits. Whereas the military, their pattern has been if you get raped, you then turn around and get diagnosed with a borderline personality disorder. Now it's bipolar personality disorder or bipolar disorder. And then they have no benefit. So we're trying to save them from going through extra steps after they get out because it just only makes things tougher on them to get help. And so if they're discharged dishonorably or thrown out on a medical, then they're not eligible for VA benefits.
And again, I'm speaking with Jennifer Norris, who's a former U.S. Air Force tech sergeant who was forced into early retirement because of post-traumatic stress disorder from military sexual trauma. She currently volunteers at the Military Rape Crisis Center, helping both active duty and veteran victims of sexual violence. And the SAPRO, the Sexual Assault Prevention and Response Program that you just mentioned, is not working. I mean, obviously, the fact that the head of the Air Force's SAPRO program himself was just arrested for sexual assault would lead one to assume that the culture of those administering this program are not exactly sympathetic to women or victims of sexual violence. Why is that? Is this just the kind of macho culture? Is there just simply? I mean, I thought that they've been doing sensitivity training and all this stuff. Is it just that the guys don't get it?
No, they get it. What's happening is no one's getting punished for their crimes, and they're either retiring in lieu of a court martial, or the case is never moving forward because the commander's protecting the person, or if it does move forward, you know, the prosecution rate is 8% because the victims are getting re-traumatized over and over. So what you're finding is that even though people might have tried to turn in a predator or a rapist, that nothing happened to them. So in the Air Force, we called it F up, move up, which means when you mess up, you actually get promoted. And that's how things work in the military. If you're in a situation where they don't want you there anymore and they don't necessarily want you out, they'll just promote you to a different location and you can continue on with your business in that new location and nobody knows for the better because there's no paper trails.
And what about the general in Afghanistan that was arrested for sexual assault? Did that make a difference?
Absolutely not. I think all of these things in totality this past year have helped to bring a point home. But just on themselves, no. We see the same thing over and over, that yes, we take this seriously, yes, zero tolerance, but then there's never any justice that followed up with it. And then even to take it a step further, on top of not getting justice, these people remain in the military, move up the ranks, and now you're asking those people who once were sexually assaulting at lower levels are now in higher positions doing the same thing, and they're better at it.
Well, there was the case of, in the Air Force in Italy, of Lieutenant Colonel James Wilkerson, who was reinstated after he was found guilty of sexual assault, and an Air Force general overturned the jury's verdict, voiding Wilkerson's sexual assault conviction. And then we've also got the cases at Lackland Air Force Base, where 12 instructors were investigated for sexual misconduct towards 31 trainees. You know, with one of the trainers sentenced to 20 years for rape and sexual assault. And then I mentioned the Army General Jeffrey Sinclair was charged in 2012 with sexually assaulting a female subordinate, then threatening her career if she went public. So, you know, his case, of course, got some publicity, but so did the case of Wilkerson's, you know, avoiding a jury's verdict. A superior officer doing that is pretty bizarre. And I guess, is that what you're saying, that there's a kind of an old boys club here where when the guys screw up, they get promoted, but when the women get victimized, they lose their benefits and get diagnosed with bipolar and other problems, rather than the obvious fact that they've been traumatized by an unfair, by brutal attacks and an unfair and lack of justice.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're saying. The Wilkerson case clearly showed exactly why it is we want to take it out of the chain of command. It absolutely goes against everything that America stands for as far as justice goes. Why should one person have the authority to say, oh, no, I don't believe them and you're not guilty? When in every other case, you would have to go through an appeals process, you would have to do things by the book. What we're saying is this is not okay to have one person have that much authority to throw out a conviction and then reinstate someone so they can go somewhere else and do it somewhere else because, you know, they're friends with a commander. And then the other thing about the commanders having too much authority is that that one person, all it takes is one bad command to ruin a good soldier's career. So if that commander decides, oh, I don't believe you, and now I'm going to kick you out because you're a troublemaker, then that one commander has the power to do that. And that's where MRCC comes in, is when they contact us. It's usually after they've reported and they're now being retaliated against. So we help them, you know, do what they got to do to be safe, and then make sure if they're going to get out of the military that they get out with the benefits that they deserve so they can get the help that they need, because they can't get it in the military.
So when you referred earlier, Jennifer Norris, that the SAPRO, the Sexual Assault Prevention and Response Program, is a farce, and that people in the military know it is, it's window dressing. What is this other group that you say is effective? MRCC, is that what's it stand for?
Yes, MRCC is the organization that I work for. It's called Military Rape Crisis Center. We're a non-governmental organization that was created in order to help active duty military, because we recognize while we were serving that there was absolutely nothing and nowhere for them to turn. So the executive director created the agency as a result of that while she was still living in her barracks at Coast Guard Boston. This is how amazing this woman is. And since then, it's just grown in leaps and bounds. And at the same time, an advocacy organization called Protect Our Defenders stepped in and then took it to another level with a legislative piece. So MRCC is working on boots on the ground with the soldiers, and then we're feeding Protect Our Defenders all the loopholes and problems and all the different things that most people don't think about. For example, like the Coast Guard, does not fall under the Department of Defense. They fall under the Department of Homeland Security, so we have to address them as well in a completely different way. We also have to address each National Guard in each state, because they will not be held to federal laws. They will have to create their own state laws. And people don't know about this stuff, but as we learn it, we're feeding it to Congress and to Protect Our Defenders so that they can incorporate it into the STOP Act.
And in Congress, you've got some champions, don't you, with Senator Gillibrand, Senator Patty Murray, and Kelly Ayotte, the new Republican senator from New Hampshire. What's your sense of what they're doing? And then, of course, the president weighed in today. Whether the rhetoric will be followed up by action, of course, is another matter. But what's your sense of where things stand legislatively?
Well, from what I understand, the STOP Act was stalled by the House of Representatives for this past year, and I actually testified in front of them in January. And I kind of got the same feeling when I was testifying that, you know, it just really wasn't a priority to them. And apparently the senators saw this, the Senate Armed Services Committee saw this hearing and said, this is not okay. You know, you military leaders should have stayed and listened to what the survivors are telling you. So they held the SASC hearing like a couple months later and had four other survivors come in and tell their stories. And it's really, they're really taking the ball and running with it now, because they've got the same stories coming out of different people all over, you know, the country. You know, so it's not, you can't say this isn't happening. The pattern is there. It's been clearly established. Everybody's stories are the same as far as, you know, what happened and then how command handled it and then how their careers ended as a result of it. And you cannot deny those facts. So we need to, we're trying to keep the senators abreast of all these things as they come up, including asking for their help to help us with some issues. Like, for example, can you help us get an expedited transfer for this person off this base so they can get away from this predator? You literally do have to call a congressperson and get the military to act.
And that's what the MRCC does, right? They're able to,
yes,
to people that are in, within the military that are being assaulted by a predator who's higher up in the ranks and they're cut off at the pass. They can't turn to anybody in the chain of command. They can turn to MRCC, get the information out, and then that's fed to Protect Our Defenders, who and then turn feed it to the Congress, and then the Congress person then has to go to the top brass in the Pentagon, and it goes back down the chain before anything is done. Is that how it works?
Yes, and what we've been doing all year is trying to educate folks how things work in the military, and as a result, for, you know, I don't know, it just feels like it's time for that change, because all the things that have come out this past year have clearly showed what we were trying to say. And we're seeing it on boots on the ground with MRCC, too, that not only are they getting retaliated against when they report, but the ones that are getting, like, assaulted and raped by people in their chain of command or officers, they won't say a word. They will not report. They just want to get out. That's how scared they are.
Well, that figure is borne out by the disparity between the numbers of people that have reported rapes and the estimates of 26,000. I mean, that's a pretty stark difference, is it not? You know, from 3,374 reported to 26,000 that actually happened, and even that may be a low figure, right?
We believe that it is a low figure. Based on the fact that we were in the military, so we know how those surveys work. They're mandatory, but we're still distrustful that the information could somehow get back to a leader and it might come back to us. So, yeah, not everybody's going to tell the truth on those surveys. The people that do, it's happening. So, yes, we believe it's much higher.
Well, Jennifer Norris, I thank you for joining us here today and filling us in on this disgraceful situation, which hopefully the Commander-in-Chief, having spoken out about it, will make sure that something is done to address it.
That's what we're hoping for. We feel this is an emergency and it needs to be dealt with immediately.
Well, again, I thank you for joining us. Bye for now.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Jennifer Norris, who's a former U.S. Air Force tech sergeant who was forced into early retirement because of post-traumatic stress disorder from military sexual trauma. She currently volunteers at the Military Rape Crisis Center, helping both active duty and veteran victims of sexual violence. And we're going to take a brief station break. We'll be back and go to South Carolina for an update on the race, the special congressional race between Governor Mark Sanford and Elizabeth Colbert Bush.